You're listening to Native Fest, a series highlighting the art, music, writing, and culture of Native people living in Minnesota.
Back in the studio with me, we have Dr. Anton Choyer.
I've just been so amazed by the stories at Red Lake. Of course, our people had been on the move for a long time prior to the arrival of Europeans and continued to move afterwards. And so it's really not until the 1700s that the first Ojibwe folk arrive in Red Lake. And we start with this famous story of the Battle River fight, which established Ojibwe people in Red Lake. And it's an interesting and dramatic story, but it kind of sets the stage for that process of, on the one hand, the Ojibwe story is one of cultural continuity. And then on the other hand, it's also cultural change. It's both. And in fact, the ability to change and evolve is a very traditional belief and practice. And it plays out very heavily in a place like Red Lake. So, you know, there's the Battle River fight. We look at this, there's a Dakota boy who's, you know, he was with a Dakota war expedition that came up towards Panema at Red Lake. They got run out of there, and this boy was too small to run from grown men. One of the Ojibwe warriors at Red Lake could have killed him. You know, it would have been fair game by the rules of war at the time, and he said, "Stop, that's my son." Instead of killing him, he took him as a captive but made him his own son and raised him that way. Gave him an Ojibwe name, Wabi Benace, the White Thunderbird. He kept his Dakota clan, and it was then introduced at Red Lake, the Kingfisher clan. And if you look at the Red Lake national flag today, the Kingfisher's on there. So that clan is now represented in the body of hereditary chiefs. It's represented in the body of spiritual leaders and in political leaders. And there actually have been elected tribal chairmen, hereditary chiefs, and spiritual leaders from that particular clan. That's from Dakota paternity. If you look at older stuff, it would say, you know, traditional hereditary chiefs have to come from the Loon clan or the Crane clan. There's no Loon or Crane anywhere on Red Lake's flag. So you've got this change, Ojibwe people changing the nature of leadership in Red Lake to accommodate their place. They had to pick chiefs from who was there. Red Lake was settled by warriors. And so you've got this ancient hereditary clan system, but you've also got new clans like the Kingfisher, and you've got, you know, new respect for creating an entirely different political environment at the same time that you have this, you know, ancient respect for clans and heredity, and it just keeps evolving and changing. So you kind of look at that early phase, and then as you go forward, you know, through the treaty period, sometimes we think of our experience as a victim experience, but it was so much more than that. You know, some tribes in America fought the U.S. government, usually lost not only the war, but their land when they did. Some tribes accommodated, like the Cherokee did. They still got moved on a trail of tears. And then there were some like the Ojibwe that had a bit of a hybrid approach. And so we stood up for ourselves. We argued. We engaged in diplomacy. We didn't just blindly fight. And because our population straddled the U.S. and Canadian border, and because we were a little more geographically isolated, it's not by mistake that Ojibwe people have land on all of the largest lakes in Minnesota today. And they include Lake Vermilion, and they include Red Lake, upper and lower, and they include Lake of the Woods, and so forth. And all of that was by design. Our people were really effective negotiators in an impossible time. And so we look at moose dung at Red Lake as a way to, you know, show how that happened. And then he who is spoken to, who took us from villages, completely independent, didn't deal with anybody else, and all of a sudden started forming a nation out of all these villages. So there is, again, a political transformation. And then you look at Noden Wind, and he kind of leads Red Lake through the war on culture and out of isolationism, and it keeps on evolving. Peter Graves was also an amazing bridge builder, very fluent in English, in addition to Ojibwe. He was offered admission to Princeton University in the 19-teens and declined because they gave him a baseball scholarship. He said, they just value me for my ability to play ball, went back to Red Lake, and he led the defense of Red Lake against allotment, against relocation. He was so effective, so brilliant. Huge dividends were paid. He's the one who got Red Lake separated from all the other Ojibwe tribes in Minnesota and protected their financial interests. And you get, you know, Roger Jourdain in, you know, a more contemporary experience, constitutional reform and development. And he led all of Indian country in developing taro programs so Indians could hire Indians. You know, the life expectancy for Red Lakers increased 1 year for nearly every year he was in office, 32 years in a row. You know, and that was all through intentional political action. He developed, you know, ambulance services and hospitals and all kinds of things. And so each leader transformed Red Lake over and over again in their own unique trajectory. And when you get to the current age, you know, there's a chapter in there about Anna Gibbs, who's a spiritual leader at Red Lake. And it's her life is kind of a window into all of these different Red Lake leaders who are helping transform all of Indian country. And she's got some great answers to that question about victimhood. And she says, every time they tried to bury us, they didn't realize we were the seeds.
Thanks for listening. Native Fest was produced by the Net Lake Radio Project and was made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.